It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Mix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it. They do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set. He's back to throw. Finds the pocket. Deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds? Yes. Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure. Brady's chase. Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone. A jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Presented by Andrew Mark on Giants.com and on your Giants mobile app on your cell phone, iTunes, Google, BlackBerry, you name it, we got it. Mr. Meadow, good morning.
How are we doing, Mr. Schmelk?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Gearing up for this Sunday night showdown between the Giants and the Eagles. Should be a good divisional battle as the Giants trying to build off that win against the Carolina Panthers. Guys are trying to get healthy. A couple of injuries of note. Antrell Roll did not practice yesterday. He was inside working out, still nursing that bone bruise on his knee. They are optimistic that he'll try to go out there, basically because of his track record. As Perry Fuel mentioned yesterday, John, it's stunning when Antrell Roll not even plays a game, but doesn't even participate in a practice because he pretty much has been out there, you name it, no matter what he's had to deal with in the past. So they're optimistic that he'll be able to go, and he's going to be a key guy defensively for the Giants to stop the run.
Though I got to be honest, he did not sound as optimistic as I've heard him in the past yesterday. Like you said, he always plays, and he always gives, guys, I'm playing, don't worry about it. Guys, I'm playing, don't worry about it. But there was a tinge of doubt in his voice when he spoke to the media yesterday because, frankly, I think he's a little confused as to why the knee doesn't feel better. All it was a bruise and a cut. They had the MRI. They looked at the knee. There's no damage, apparently. But it's not getting better as quick as everyone thought it was going to get better. So they're really taking a look at it, and trying to figure out exactly when he can come back. But if he's not on the practice field today, I'd be worried about him going on Sunday.
But guys have been able to get away with no practice or very limited practice and go out there. I guess it depends.
Rare for no practice, though. Rare no practice. Coach likes to have his guys practice the week of the game.
You got to wonder, though, with the depth at safety, do they not take the conservative route with Antrell Roll? I mean, Stevie Brown's played well when his number has been called. He is a special teams contributor. But I think with Tyler Sash still suspended, they really need Antrell Roll more so than any other position. I mean, you have a corner down, you can turn to the depth chart. The safety, it's very limited in terms of your options. So I think whether Roll's 100% or not, I would be surprised if he doesn't play.
All right, we'll see what happens. And you're right. There is a question of depth in the secondary, especially with Michael Cole's hamstring. He has practiced on a limited basis this week. Jaron Holsley really hasn't been able to go. I doubt he'll be able to play this week. I don't think David Deal is going to be able to play this week either. But Prince will likely get the start across from Corey Webster. Corey Webster, of course, will be playing with that fractured hand. He'll have a soft wrap and cast on it for the game to protect it, to make sure it isn't hurt it any further. We'll see how that affects his ability to jam guys like DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin at the line of scrimmage. Obviously, you know, fractured hand, it might be harder to jam. We'll see. So I think this is a very dangerous game. The Eagles have not played well this year. We've gone through all the numbers. The 12 turnovers, the minus 6, 9 sacks, Michael Vick, 6 interceptions, 5 fumbles, 3 of them lost, 5th most penalized offense. There's a million things the Eagles have done poorly, but there's also a million things that they've done well. 5th-ranked offense, 5th-ranked defense, holding opponent quarterbacks to the lowest quarterback rating. There's a million different things they've done. They're a good team, and they've won 2 out of 3 despite all those turnovers because they're playing football so darn well. And if they can figure out a way to put everything together, just by the law of averages, no team can physically average 4 turnovers a game over an entire season. Those numbers are going to go down. Michael Vick is on pace to fumble the ball 25 times this year. That's just not going to happen. Those numbers don't occur in the NFL. He's on pace to throw 30 interceptions. That's not going to happen. They're not going to turn over as much. And if it is this game with the Giants' injuries coming off that big win against Carolina, Eagles coming off a bad loss, the Giants better bring their A game to this game on Sunday night or they could be in a lot of trouble, in my opinion. I think it's a very dangerous time for the Giants to face the Eagles.
And I think the blitz is an important aspect to this game. Michael Vick, the reason why the turnovers have piled up, John, is because teams have been able to pressure him. And when he is with his back against the wall, sometimes he makes questionable decisions. And a lot of the Eagles' turnovers, as you mentioned, they've been able to move the ball. That's not the issue. But when they get in the red zone and space is very tight and the opposition dials up the blitz, that's when Vick is coughing up the football.
Right.
So the Giants have opportunities, and I think they will present themselves on Sunday. It's just a matter of, can you be in the right position to get a hit and force him to lose the football and then give yourself good field position and capitalize on the other end? A lot of the Eagles' games would not be as close if Philly did not turn the football over. Arizona, for example, Michael Vick within the 5-yard line, blindside hit. The Eagles lose the ball. Arizona returns it the opposite way for a touchdown. And the same thing with the Ravens game. And you go back to even the Browns game. They're lucky to win that Browns game because even though Vic had 4 interceptions, Brandon Whedon returned the favor with 4 picks of his own.
I thought he played well last night, by the way.
He
Brandon
did.
Whedon.
They were in that game right till the end. And I thought with that Hail Mary, we were maybe going to revisit the Monday night game, although the regular officials were back, and I'm sure a lot of people are happy about that, as well as the players and coaches. But getting back to the Eagles, the bottom line is, you know, we've thrown the numbers out there. John just laid it out. But Michael Vick has a tendency to not be able to protect the football.
Correct.
And the Giants have been good at least capitalizing when teams make mistakes. They haven't necessarily been piling up the sacks. The quarterback hits have not been skyrocketing. Perry Fuel even talked about it at the beginning of the season. We aim to average about 9 to 10 quarterback hits a game. They haven't had that one game that they can point to where they've reached that mark. But this is a banged-up Philadelphia offensive line, John. They lost their starting center in Jason Kelsey. They're mixing and matching guys at the tackles and guard spots. This could be a game that if you're the Giants, you're licking your chops and you're saying, you know what, if we're going to turn the corner and make the numbers go up in the categories that we want to see the averages get better, this has that game written all over it.
And obviously Jason Peters is out for the year, their all-pro left tackle, but his replacement is banged up as well, King Dunlap.
Yeah.
So they might end up having to start Demetrius Bell, something that came over from the Bills last season. You mentioned Kelsey, their center. He's out for the season as well. Dallas Reynolds, a 3-year practice squad player. This will be his first NFL start, just his 3rd NFL game. He's played fairly well. He knows what he's doing. He's been on the team, on the practice squad, like I mentioned, for 3 years. But, yes, the Eagles have had issues with blitzes. They've handled 4-man rushes okay. But when teams blitz, they have issues. And a lot of it, Lance, not just the offensive line. Their passing game, and whether it's their design or Michael Vick's decision, they don't use a quick passing game. It's a lot of 5-step drops, a lot of 7-step drops, and Vic holds the football. He's always trying to make that big play down the field, and that's allowed and given time for defenses to get to him and sack him, knock him down, strip the ball, force turnovers, etc.
You've got to wonder, would they change things up given the pressure packages that the Giants can throw out there? I mean, look at Tony Romo. He had success against the Giants when he went for those quick slant passes.
Right, and you got to wonder if the Eagles do adjust for this week. The other difference for the Eagles this year is LeSean McCoy. They seem to be trying to use him a little bit less to kind of save the bullets a little bit. You don't want to overwork him. However, I get that. You want to save the bullets a little bit. But isn't this a game where you want to unleash him? So if you're going to have, you know, 3 or 4 games where you do use LeSean McCoy a lot, you figure a game against a division rival Giants would be a game you would unleash LeSean McCoy. So I would not be surprised to see McCoy with 30 or so touches over the course of the day in offense, whether it's, you know, catching, screens, runs, whatever the case might be. I think you're going to see a heavy dose of LeSean McCoy.
He only had 16 touches in the loss to Arizona, and you can make the argument, well, they were down, they abandoned the run, but McCoy, as you just mentioned, is so heavily involved in the passing game that that's where you really want him to get out into the open field. Short screen passes, and that's how you can counter the pass rush and the blitzes. I would be stunned if they don't go heavy with McCoy, especially since they really haven't gotten into a rhythm in the passing game where they could get DeSean Jackson going. He's a guy that's killed the Giants time and time again. The only thing that scares me about Philly, you've got Jeremy Maclin coming back into the mix, John, and you also have Riley Cooper, who has practiced the last couple of days. And he's not necessarily a big name, but another one that has some familiarity with Vic and could open up the passing game. So the Eagles are going to be a lot more healthy than they were when they were entering the Cardinals game last week, and that could be a big bonus to help ignite their offense.
201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Also on Twitter, you can send in your questions to hashtag Giants Chat. All right, Lance, I'm going through Twitter here a little bit. Let's see.
We got one about the pass rush.
Yeah, we got a couple of different
things. Imperative for them to get to Vic, which we just touched on. Sean Underhill, at Quick Brittle, touching on that, says, not a player, but our front four needs to dominate Sunday night, pressure Vic all night, and we take a division road win. And the Giants have been very good on the road. That's another thing to bring up. You can't always look back at previous seasons, but let's be honest. The Giants have had success specifically against the Eagles and the Cowboys on the road, more
correct,
so than here at MetLife Stadium. And you wonder if those trends will continue. I don't know necessarily if this is a do-or-die game. A lot of people are throwing that out because they lost to the Cowboys, and you don't want to go 0-2 in the division.
You're 2-1 in week four.
That's stupid. Well, I'm not necessarily agreeing with it. I'm just saying that.
Why are you repeating nonsense?
Well, because I'm throwing out the chatter.
You're wasting my time.
Well, maybe it'll spark a phone call or two. Maybe somebody out there actually disagrees and thinks that it is a make-or-break game.
I challenge them to call up, like Tim in Jackson, New Jersey, who's on the line. Timmy, good morning, pal. How are you?
Hey, Tim, what you got?
Yes.
Go ahead, Tim.
Tim, what you got?
Looks like we lost Tim there. All sorry, right. Tim. Give us a call back. We'll get you back up. Tim's always there. He always does
that. Yeah, normally he has, usually the question of the day for us.
I know. He does have the question of the day. That is true. That is true. But a couple of things with this Eagles team that not a lot of people have mentioned. They actually have two pretty dynamic return guys in the punt and kick game. Now, they haven't done much in the regular season. They were good in the preseason, and both guys were pretty prolific when they were in college. One guy was the Special Teams Player of the Year. One is the SEC, I think, Special Teams Player of the Year. Brandon Boykin does punts, and Demaris Johnson, their seventh-round pick, does kicks. And Demaris is really an interesting player. I've heard people call him kind of like the mini Deshaun Jackson, in that he's really fast, he's explosive, but he's only like 5'7 and 170 pounds. So this is a little guy. Lance, you'll love him. But
Vinny from PA on your mind, right?
I did.
That's why.
Well, he's also a little guy. So
and
there
he's
you
from
go.
Philly. So.
And, you know, Johnson's a guy, I think he had 6 catches last week out of the slot for them. And they use him in the kick return game. So that's something else the Giants have to worry about here, is not giving up big plays in the return game.
Well, I think he had a big game in terms of receiving because Jeremy Maclin was out of the picture.
Of course.
That's why they utilized him in the passing game. But you're right. You know, you never want to give up solid field position to the Eagles, because if Michael Vick and company only need to work with 60 to 50 yards of the field, that's dangerous. That's a gift. And I doubt that Philadelphia would mind having those opportunities, but you just can't afford to let that happen if you're the Giants. And for the most part, remember, they've had some big plays on special teams this season. Against the Panthers, they forced them to cough up the football. Same thing with Tampa Bay. You want that track record to continue because it gives Eli Manning less pressure. He can be in a position where the offense doesn't have to strain itself, doesn't have to do so much. So special teams could very well be the difference. And we don't have to remind Giants fans about that miracle run last season. You could point to just about every game, and something happened as a result of special teams.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Mike in Maryland. What's up, Mike?
Hey, I just wanted to call. I saw on Twitter you guys looking for predictions on the game.
Sure, what do you got?
Yeah, it's going to be like 35-27 Eagles. It's going to be it's a typical Giants-Eagles game. It's going to come down to whoever has the ball last. And basically, we're going to dominate you guys like we normally do. I mean, it's going to be a tough, drag-it-out fight, but, you know, we got it.
Wow. Well, hold on. But you said it's going to be 35-27. How was that domination? Okay. Great response.
Wow. You silenced the caller. Well, just one counter.
Big Eagles fan, which is fine. You can call in and predict the Eagles are going to win. I don't care. But don't.
We have no problem with that.
But don't say the Eagles are going to dominate. Then say they're going to win by one score. Do I need to bring up the Webster definition of dominate?
Wait a minute. Just to play devil's advocate here, since I love to do
what,
that.
What, a garbage time touchdown? Please.
You never. Well, wait
nonsense.
A minute. Maybe that was what he was alluding to.
Well,
they go up 35-14. The defense feels comfortable. They drop back.
I'm surprised the Eagle fan following the Giants on Twitter.
Well, sometimes.
That's what I find confusing.
You can't argue with the New York product compared to the Philly product.
Well, and the high quality of the Giants' tweets obviously have a lot to do with that.
Absolutely.
Those great tweets.
I'm actually surprised that we don't have maybe some Giants fans here ready to counter that claim.
Oh, they're
we
coming in.
We have an
in.
Eagles fan that calls up, predicts an Eagles victory, and Giants fan base is not up in arms over
well,
that?
Well, let's go to Howard in D.C., see what he has to say. What's up, Howard? Howard, go ahead, pal. Howard.
Hello?
Yeah, Howard,
what
ahead.
You got?
Good, Howard.
Howard, you there, pal? All right, guess not.
Boy, a rough start to this Friday morning here.
Great job on the call screening by Melroy. All over it as always.
Well, he's all excited because he got to recommend a game for us to pick later on in the show.
Yes.
So he's trying to work off of that momentum.
A game, there is no game that less people are more interested in. I think people are going to watch the Northwestern Southern Kentucky college football game on Saturday than that Bengals Jaguars match.
And they're going to tape it and rewatch it over again on Sunday.
What does that say? Cash? Yes. All right, Cash in New York. What's up, Cash?
Hey, good morning.
What's up, pal?
I would definitely like to predict the Giants win. You know, without dominating front four, stepping it up right now at this moment with a crucial win over the Panthers, I think we're going to keep this guy, Michael Vick, inside the pocket. And it's going to be a real, real close game, hard and gritty. You know how the Giants and Eagles do. But I'm not predicting the Giants win.
There you go, Cash.
I would
like
say
it.
About 27-14, if Vick can stay healthy.
All right. Now that is a more lopsided win in favor of the Giants there, and he's right. One of the keys here, and you know, stopping the run is fine, LeSean McCoy. But look, Andy Reid teams. We know how Andy Reid teams work. They win the game by throwing the football. So if the Giants are going to do well, they are going to have to contain and control and disrupt Michael Vick. That's really the bottom line, isn't it?
Here's a question in terms of the Giants side of things on offense. Raheem Semper at incredible _17. If Ahmad Bradshaw doesn't play good by the half, do you think we'll go back to using Andre Brown in the third quarter?
Well, I think we're going to see Andre Brown throughout the first half anyway. Ahmad Bradshaw might be the starter, but I think we're going to see plenty of Andre Brown, and we should, considering how well he's played the last six quarters.
Tom Coughlin made it very clear. Bradshaw is the starter heading into Sunday night's game. But they're going to ride the hot hand. And Kevin Gilbride touched on this too. And the Giants have a track record of doing that. Remember when they had three running backs, Jacobs, Bradshaw, and Ward. They basically worked with whoever got into the best rhythm throughout the course of the game. You're going to see both of those players. Andre Brown, if anything, what he proved last week, he deserves a bigger role.
Well, I think we figured out why Howard in D.C. wasn't there. He's actually Allen in D.C. Allen, good morning, pal. How are you?
Hey, what's going on, guys? First of all, you know, I'm looking forward to the division game, and I do not see the Giants losing this game. Like that Philly fan said, Giants are going to win two touchdowns. We're going to see some salsa dancing. We're going to see even a little bit of Nixon, Ramsey, Barton. I think we're going to get a good dosage of our receiving core. I want to know who you think will be more effective in the receiving core against Philly. I know that the run game is important. For this game, but you know, I want to know who in the receiving game is going to have to step up and how they're doing. I know they were injured last week. How Nix and Hickson are doing, and how much actually of Ramsey's Barton we're going to see this week?
Okay, I'll touch on one of those first. Nix practiced yesterday. He looked okay. He'll be fine. Hickson, he practiced, he'll be okay. I think you'll see Barton and Hickson rotate in that third wide receiver spot. I think you'll see both in certain situations. As for what receiver is going to have a big game, I think the Giants' advantage is in the slot right now. You have Victor Cruz going up against a rookie in Brandon Boykin, who's actually played pretty well this year until last week when Larry Fitzgerald kind of ate his lunch a little bit. But, you know, it's Larry Fitzgerald. Let's not kill the kid too much. We're getting beat up by Larry Fitzgerald. But I think where the Giants' advantage is in this game is in the slot against the rookie. That's where Victor Cruz will do his damage, and I think that's where the Giants have the advantage in the passing game.
And last season, Victor Cruz had that breakout game against the Philadelphia Eagles where he had the big catch and run and then out-jumped Nnamdi Asamoah. So I would agree. I think Victor Cruz has the advantage. I think he has the advantage in most games. I don't think a lot of teams have a solid slot corner that they can put against Victor Cruz and really slow him down. So it goes without saying that Cruz is a favorite to have a big game and help Eli Manning get going. And as far as Ramsey's Barton is concerned, you know, compared to the Andre Brown situation, yes, it was a big step in the right direction for Barton, but I don't really see him jumping up the depth chart at this point. They're not going to push him ahead of Akeem Nix or Victor Cruz.
No.
He's going to, like you said, have to carve out a role in rotation with Dominic Hickson. So that means that his snaps are going to be much limited than they were last week against the Carolina Panthers. But then again, Barton still is a guy that when he's out out on the field needs to prove that when his number is called, he can make plays. And this is going to be a game, once again, where they're going to turn to him, but he is going to have to make a quicker impact on limited opportunities.
I love the tweet coming in from 7 with a T. The Eagles are going to demolish the Giants 2-0. Hashtag stuff Eagles fans say. I thought that was actually kind of amusing. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Jay in Arvington. What's up, Jay?
Hey, what's going on, man?
How are you,
buddy?
I just
wanted to say that Eli is going to have all his candy this week, so I really think he's going to have his pickings with this Eagles secondary, man. Nnamdi Ashoi hasn't been playing like he's supposed to play since he's been in Oakland, and I just don't believe their secondary can hang without receivers based on what Arizona did to them. And defensively, I just think our line, with a little pressure, you know, with a little extra blitz packages, I think we're just going to keep Vic in the pocket, make him throw. He's going to make mistakes, and we're going to dominate the game.
Hey, look, Asamoah's been playing better this year, Jay, but you're right, he's still not to the Pro Bowl All-Pro level that he was when he was with Oakland, but he is playing better, and they'll use him in bump and run. And then Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie has a lot of speed, but much like Asante Samuel, he takes a lot of chances, so you can beat him for the big play here or there.
Yeah, that's the only person I'm worried about, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. I think he's the best corner on their team right now.
Absolutely. Appreciate the phone call. 201-939-4513. You could also chime in on the conversation. Hashtag Giants chat. Oscar Rivera, I predict Vic will be injured by the middle of the second quarter.
Hey, well, you know what, though? That is not a bad prediction. Not that the Giants are trying to hurt anybody. That's not the point. But he's a small guy. He's been hit a ton. And in the past, he has been injury prone. So, I mean, would I be blown away if that happened? No.
Last season, did not make it through the first game. And the second game, it was the Vince Young show. Or I should say the somewhat Vince Young show.
Oh, Eagles did win that game.
They did. He put together a decent drive late. Early first half, Giants had opportunities. They just couldn't capitalize.
That was the worst. That was the worst loss of the year, in my opinion.
That was a tough one.
Season.
Absolutely.
That was bad. At home, Vince Young, I mean, what was the final, like 2013 in that game, something like that, 17-10?
And they had that lengthy drive. It was about, what, 13 plays, 80 yards, it milked the clock.
Disaster.
Yeah.
Absolute disaster.
But getting back to the quarterback situation, before we certainly move on to some other topics related to this game, you can continue to chime in on Twitter and via phone, 201-939-4513. There has been a lot of speculation this week based on Vic's play and Andy Reid's uncertainty as the
people
coach moving forward.
Overreading into a simple statement at a press conference. They asked him, are you thinking about making a change? Oh, no, right now Michael Vick's our quarterback, and that's what we're doing. That all of a sudden became Andy Reid's considering changing quarterbacks. Always said, right now Michael Vick is my quarterback, that's what we're doing going forward. That turned into doubt. We don't know who the quarterback is. He might go to Nick Foles. How does that quote equate with we're going to make a change of quarterback? Can someone explain this to me, how those two things work?
Well, it's the media at work. That's the simple answer.
Well, but we're truth tellers here. We're not spinning stuff. This is reality.
But you can't overlook that ownership was very clear with Andy Reid and said that his job's on the line. So if Vic keeps coughing up the football and is not getting rid of the football quick enough, aren't you thinking maybe perhaps it's time to experiment a little and make a change?
Hey, look, I don't disagree. If they get to a point where Vic keeps playing this way and he has these sorts of issues and you want to make a change down the road, that's fine. But that's not what the reaction was about. The reaction was about something Andy Reid said, which was right now Michael Vick is our starter and that's what we're doing going forward. That turned into the Eagles are thinking about changing their starting quarterback. Now, if you want to say they should think about a change because Vic is playing poorly, that's something that we can have a conversation about. But I don't want to hear people spinning Andy Reid's statement into the he's considering changing quarterbacks and there's doubt he doesn't know who his quarterback's going to be. Just because he used the expression right now. I've heard Coach here use that expression a million times. Right now he's our starter. It's what coaches say.
Well, they don't want to give away the game plan.
Twists and turns and manipulate so they can have a front page
new
story. No, but it's annoying. Because you have the fans that don't see the press conference or see the quotes. All they see is the headline, and all of a sudden, Eagles are changing their quarterback. There's no responsibility here, Lance.
You know, I thought Ramsey's Barden would be a big storyline that we can milk for 16 to 17 weeks. And
this
now
annoyed
I'm thinking
me. This Vic
we
thing
can
annoyed
move
me.
On now.
This
the
Vic
media,
thing annoyed me.
Big picture media here. This is the next topic that we can maybe work on over the next couple of weeks. Well, I'll look for clips each and every day that maybe can spice things up here.
201-939-4513.
I'm not going to let you off the hook, and this may spark some extra phone calls. For those of you who had an opportunity to watch the NFL Network production, Football Live, Tom Coughlin, okay, this is where the show really reaches a whole new level. I'm sitting down. I'm watching the program.
I have not seen it, by the way.
And it was a great piece,
by
the way.
It is on my DVR.
Well, you're going to have to get around to seeing it.
I'll watch it before the game on Sunday.
But for those of you who have not had an opportunity to see it, and by the way, it was a great piece. I thought they really did a nice job of showing the other side of Tom Coughlin. And you walk away, you see him as a family man, and you see some of the other interests that he has outside of football. But I don't want to necessarily sit here and summarize it. The part that I was really fascinated about, 55 minutes, 2 seconds in. That's how passionate I was about that scene. Tom Coughlin on the left, Judy Coughlin on the right, outside the Timex Center. And there's this man in the background. He's working very hard. He's adjusting a microphone, it seems. He's getting Coughlin ready for an interview. It is none other than the man that I have the pleasure of sitting across from right now. John Schmelk, a cameo for about 3 seconds in a Football Life,
well,
Tom Coughlin.
See, what that is, no one knows this yet, but it's a preview for their next documentary, John Schmelk, a Football Life.
I can't wait for that production.
It will be about 8 seconds long. Me saying hello and then the Giants firing me. That would probably be the summation of that John Schmelk of Football Life.
Just out of curiosity, do you even remember? I know you haven't seen it. Do you remember?
I do.
That
yep.
day. And,
yeah,
that was all about.
We were interviewing Coach Coughlin and his lovely wife Judy about the J Fund. I believe that was right after the ice cream social that we have in the spring back in. I think that was in 2011. And you know, we were just getting ready for a nice little interview, trying to get the mic on without screwing up, which apparently I did. But you know, that's it. Good times.
It took the production to a whole new level.
Honestly, what I thought when somebody told me I was in it with Coach, and I'm like, oh no, somebody has on tape him, you know, busting my chops about something. Because Coach loves doing that to me. He likes nothing more than riding me about pretty much anything. He just gets a kick out of it. Most people seem to.
Of course, I'm not going to deny that. Are you kidding me?
201.
I make it a daily habit.
201-939-4513. Lennon, Maryland, help me, buddy. What's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing this morning?
Doing well,
Len. What you got?
Good. Well, the Eagles coaches have probably spent the usual 100 hours preparing for the Giants.
Yep.
Not unusual.
Of course, Len. Remember this, though.
Two things for the Eagles.
Yep.
Kill the quarterback and feed McCoy. So I think from our standpoint, it's all about protecting number 10. And holding McCoy, and here goes my prediction, holding McCoy to combined yardage of no higher than 110. If we limit the Eagles to no more than 10 possessions, if we run the ball, or I shouldn't say run the ball, but if we run 10 more offensive plays than the Eagles run, I think our core 10 is better than their core 10. I think we win by 10. I can't wait for this game. It's always a big one. It's always fun. Again, I just think we're the better team.
All right, so Len, I'm going to summarize here. You want to protect Eli, get the Vic, and win the time of possession battle and limit big plays from McCoy. Does that summarize it nicely for you?
Well, pretty. Let me just clarify one thing.
Sure.
You always want to keep pressure on the quarterback. I think the Eagles will sell out to get to Eli. I think they got some numbers down, like knock him down 12 times, get 6 sacks. I think they want to get after Eli, but I think if we limit the Eagles' possessions to no more than 10, and if we can run 10 more plays than the Eagles do, and we hold McCoy combined yardage to 100, I mean, he's going to get some yards.
Of course.
But if he doesn't go crazy, if we hold him to 110 yards combined yardage, I just think we're the better team. If we can accomplish those goals, I think we win by 10 points.
Sounds good, Len. And I'll say a couple things just in addition to what you're talking about. In terms of the Giants running more plays, you'll want to run the ball. The Eagles' run defense is much improved this year with all their new faces on defense, from Michael Kendricks to D'Amico Ryans to Boykin to Fletcher Cox, their new defensive tackle. They rotate 9 defensive linemen to stop the run and put pressure on the passer. But they do not blitz as much as they used to. The Eagles are not that Jim Johnson, Sean McDermott, bring the house every play type of team anymore. They want to get there with their front four and use everyone else in coverage. They only blitzed, I think, 18% of the time last year, which is a pretty low percentage. They'll want to get there with their front four, and they can with the Trent Coles of the world, with Babin, with Cox, Darrell Tapp, Phillip Hunt, all those guys. But they don't blitz as much as they used to.
I think they changed their strategy this week.
Okay.
I think they're thinking get to Eli, and I think they'll be sending five and six guys to get to Eli, and it's going to be up to the pass protection, and I think we can do it.
Sure.
I just think right now we turn out to be the better team, and we got Victor Cruz. When you put Cruz in that slot position, wow. So we don't have to necessarily move the chains by running. 7-8 yard passes to Victor, and we move the chains, and we run 10 more plays than they do. We keep the ball out of their hands, and again, we're going to win this game, guys.
All right, Len, appreciate the call, man.
Okay, thank you. Bye bye.
Love Len. Does a good job. Good breakdown right there from Len.
And Len's numbers have been right on point. I keep bringing it up. Panthers game the other week, he said they were going to hold Carolina to 60 rushing yards, right on the nose.
Oh, did he really? I didn't know that. Good job out of Len.
Yeah, he's been studying up.
Len is
through.
And all I remember is in the offseason that one day where I'm not sure if you were here with me when we hosted that day either. You could like hear the birds chirping in the background during his phone call, and he was actually like sitting on his porch in Maryland, like by like the forest, like holding his cup of coffee and like the robe. There you go.
It's where he does his best work.
No better way to start your morning than with a little Big Blue Kickoff Live with
Absolutely.
Lance Meadow. Everyone wants to start their morning with Lance Meadow, let's be honest.
It's one of the best shows in the face of radio.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
201-939-4513. John in Allentown, Pennsylvania. What's up, Johnny?
Hey, how you doing, Lance?
Good, man.
Once again, listening to your radio show definitely is a good radio show.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Definitely. My concerns here lies with our defensive line. As of the last three games, we haven't really had that type of pass rush that we're used to seeing. Of course, JPP has, done his job. And, Tuck, OC, and everybody else on that defensive line haven't really stepped up the way that they should have, the way that we're used to seeing. Are we going to see that much pass rush this game? And does that beef between OC and Murray spark interest, as far as OC getting a little bit more riled up for this game than usual?
Honestly, I don't think OC needs any extra motivation to play hard against the Philadelphia Eagles, and he shouldn't. That being said, the Eagles have had issues pass blocking and protecting Michael Vick all year. The Giants should be able to produce some pass pressure in this game, whether it's with the four men up front or with the blitz. I think despite the fact the numbers aren't there, I think JPP has had a great year so far. He's all over the field. He's in the backfield. He's making plays. Now, Tuck and Osi, on the other hand, they've been a little bit quiet, and you like to see those guys kind of have a big game here and step up on Sunday night in Philly.
Yes, definitely. Osi, I'm a big fan of Osi and Tuck and the rest of the Giants, but, I've always loved the way they attack the offense, their opponent's offense. And that's what I would like to see this game, them just go all in. I'm looking for three sacks from at least Tuck and OC combined, and maybe just two from DPP, and a lot of pressure. We're definitely going to need a lot of people in that backfield.
Hey, John, five sacks would be a great game for that defensive line. That means they're putting some constant pressure on Vic, and that also probably means you're going to have some turnovers from the Eagles if you're, smacking Michael Vick around in the backfield that often during the game.
All right, John, appreciate the phone call, and I agree. I certainly think that based on the success that the Browns had, the Ravens had, and the Cardinals, the Giants are definitely going to want to get to Michael Vick and test him early. And all three of those teams have been able to get their fair share of hits, and that's when Michael Vick coughs up the football.
Well, any quarterback, let's be honest, it's not just Michael Vick. You put pressure on a quarterback, no matter who he is, you hit him. You hit him making the fumble. As he's throwing the ball, you hit him. He's going to throw bad passes. You put pressure on a quarterback, you're going to cause turnovers.
That's why it's in precarious situations.
One of the reasons the Giants have had so much success with their, basically organizational game plan of putting pressure on the quarterback is that it causes so many problems for opposing offenses, quarterbacks, running backs, receivers, you name it.
But you have to put Vic in a separate category, at least for the first three games, given that they've turned the ball over 12 times. Not all 12 turnovers are on Vic alone.
Correct.
But he has made mistakes at times throughout the course of the game, specifically in the red zone.
And now we welcome in our very special guest every Friday, and that's the Giants Senior Vice President of Communications, Pat Halen. Pat,
I don't mean to interrupt you guys' conversation on the impact of a defensive player hitting a quarterback and the quarterback coughing the ball up. I didn't want to interrupt that conversation.
Well, that is some very hard to get analysis there. It's very in-depth.
I was going to say, you guys studied tape. You studied tape all night long. I think Lance picked up on that over listening to those people over at Sirius XM NFL radio.
Well, he might also have picked it up watching Tom Coughlin, The Football Life, and I think it's gotten rave reviews, Pat, and I think most people we're surprised we aren't here because we see him on a day-in, day-out basis, but the other side of head coach Tom Coughlin when he's not coaching.
You weren't surprised by anything you saw in that tape?
No, I mean, there were some things I was surprised by, obviously, but...
Yeah, you know what you're surprised about.
Oh, boy, here we go.
55
no.
minutes in, did you see the star cameo appearance?
No, was he in there?
Yeah. Adjusting.
You know, let me tell you something.
Honestly, I haven't watched the whole thing. It's on my DVR.
Paul Camerata, who was the primary producer of that piece for NFL Films, didn't mess up much, but if he left a shot of Schmelk in that thing at any point in that show,
should have been on the cutting room floor.
Yeah,
thank you.
No question.
Last week, the media asked Tom if he had seen the show, and of course, he had not. And he said, "But Hanlon's seen it." And so they turned around. Maybe you were there, Schmelk.
Yeah.
They turned around to me and they said, "So are there any revelations in the show?" And I said, "Yeah, Judy Coughlin is a star."
True.
And that's exactly what she is. So, but everybody, it's received rave reviews in all corners. You know, the cynics and the critics said it might have been a little sappy, but that's okay. We like sappy.
Well, but I think the point of these documentaries, when you have these football lives, is to not just focus on the football stuff and get into the more personal off the field
stuff.
Well,
let me say this. You know, Tom, he would probably be the first one to say this. His life isn't very complicated now. He's got his faith, he's got his family, and he's got football, and he's got the J Fund, right?
Yeah.
And the show covered all four of those areas pretty well, and it was great. And Tom even said yesterday, when the media asked him again what he thought about it, he said, "Well, I've heard great things, and Judy's gotten a lot of compliments." And I've heard, you know, people talk about the importance of family and what a great show it was about family. And he said, frankly, that's why I agreed to do it in the first place, for my family. So I think it served its purpose.
Now, I've gotten a million phone calls, emails,
let me
tweets.
Tell you something.
When are we getting?
Let me tell you something. Francesa, if you've hit a million phone calls on Giants.com, that is a news flash.
I might be exaggerating a bit.
Okay.
The point being, when are we going to see Pat Halen, A Football Life? That's what everybody wants
Schmelk.
To see.
Come on, Schmelk.
Well, you did have
let
a brief
me say
appearance
this. Let me say this. That show wouldn't air on NFL Network.
HBO or like
it would
FX,
be, yeah,
something
it,
like that?
Exactly. Right. We'd have to go a little bit deeper into the cable lineup.
And there wouldn't be any time for commercial breaks.
No commercials. Right.
But as I said, you did have a brief appearance. The wishful thinking comment, they got you in there advising Tom Coughlin.
I don't think many of my – if they had any other material from me, I don't think it was usable, obviously, for
– Well, the Pat Halen fan club might be up to 5 or 6 now after the Football Life, which Okay. Everybody's very excited about. Now, we have to go to Philadelphia Sunday night.
Really? I thought we were just going to keep reviewing TV shows.
What of your favorite places to go in the whole wide world?
I do love going there.
I know you do.
I mean, it is – when you're a team like our team is and has been over the last several years – which has thrived on this road warrior mentality. Going down to Philadelphia, going to the Link, and in the old days, going to the Vet, nothing reinforces and brings out that mentality more than going, you know, 90 minutes down the turnpike to Philadelphia. You know what you're going to get. You know when you walk in there, it's just the people on your sideline, that's all you got. Because those other 65 or 70,000 people that are in that building are going to remind you all you've got. Yeah, and the beautiful thing about those people down there is they start welcoming you and reminding you of the kind of environment you're going to be in when you get off Broad Street. Like,
right.
You don't even have to get inside the building to be reminded. So, but listen, Tom Coughlin and Andy Reid this week become the two active coaches who have faced off against each other more than any other pair of coaches, okay? They're no secrets. We know what they do. They know what we do. They always throw a wrinkle at us. We heard Kevin Gilbride talk about it this week. Last year in the first game, they blitzed us at the same rate they normally do, which is about 30 to 35%. And in the second game, which Philly won here, they blitzed us like one time. So, you know, they had to make – so we make those kinds of adjustments against each other. And but they're no secrets. And it comes down to being physical. It comes down to being, you know, taking care of the football, as always. And but mostly it comes down to who's going to be more physically dominant that day. And the other thing is these games are always close. They're always close.
How many overtime games? Something like five or six
I think I heard this week that there's been like seven overtime games. It's an interesting series because last year was a weird year because we actually split the two games. Normally, once one team goes on a roll in this series, they go. You know, I think, Philly just got through winning six or seven games in a row. Prior to that, you know, we had had a streak at one point of like nine games in a row. So it's odd how the swing and momentum carries for several games in the series, yet all the games are close. They're tight, tough games that are won in the fourth quarter.
You mentioned about the Eagles' blitz, how it was inconsistent in the first two games last season on our side regarding the blitz. Antrell Roll, a little banged up with the bone bruise, has a great track record of getting on the field. Did not practice, was kept inside. Is there anything to fear regarding that?
Yeah, like Tom said, anytime they keep one of your players inside for a practice session to do rehab, you're concerned. We'll see. I think, you know, I got to be honest. I think part of the issue that we're dealing with here is the fact that Roll's not used to being hurt. Now, that's not to say he hasn't played. He's played with his share of, you know, bumps and bruises and that kind of thing, as he said yesterday. However, I don't think he's had much experience dealing with knee and leg type issues. Yeah. And as he pointed out, it's hard to play this game when you don't have those two things. So we'll see. I mean, he's a tough guy. There's no, you know, he's like Hakeem Nicks. There's no question. You don't doubt for 1 second the guy's desire to want to get on the field despite everything, however reality sets in. So we'll see. We'll see how he – it sounds like he had a good rehab session during practice yesterday, and we'll see what he's able to do today.
Now, the Giants have two pretty enviable problems, really, and I don't even want to call them problems, but Andre Brown and Ramsey's Barton both had breakout games last week. But now you have two veterans who are good players, deserve to play as well. Ahmad Bradshaw is back from injury. So is Dominic Hixon. How do you balance getting the veterans the snaps they deserved and they've earned with getting the snaps to two young guys that had breakout performances
last week? It all takes care of itself. I mean, we have this conversation every year. There's not 11 starters on offense and 11 starters on defense. There's not a running back who is your running back. Hopefully there's two running backs that are your running backs. Sometimes there's three running backs that are your running backs. You know, you don't just line up with two or three wide receivers. You need four or five wide receivers. It is not a problem. And the great thing about this team is the individuals understand that. They understand that, hey, listen, I've got – you know, I'm going to have my role. I'm going to get my touches. And, you know, everybody wants to predetermine what all this means. You can't. You know, we get in a game on Sunday night and Andre Brown gets the hot hand. I got $2 in my pocket that says he's the guy that's going to get the most carries. Ahmad Bradshaw gets the hot hand. He's going to be the guy that gets the most carries. So, you know, it's a wonderful situation to have. Andre Brown brings a different dimension. He's a different kind of runner than Ahmad is, much the same way that Jacobs was a different kind of runner than Ahmad is. So, you know, it's and our coaches are great at utilizing personnel and taking advantage of the strengths of their personnel.
How does this affect David Wilson to the Giants' first-round pick? Does he really get limited here?
David Wilson and Reuben Randall, two rookies who are obviously very talented players, are still rookies. That's what they are. And they've got their packages, that will continue to expand as they continue to earn playing time both on the practice field and in the games. And they have their roles on special teams. You know, Wilson's returning kicks, and Reuben Randall's doing a nice job on punt returns. Yep. They're contributing, which is what you want those guys to do. But if you think you're going to put – and David Wilson, I think, would be the first one to admit it. He's not ready to sit back there behind Eli Manning and take the full load and understand all the – especially a defense like Philly's, understand all the schemes and all the looks that Philly's presenting and then being able to pick up on pass protection. So he's got, but he's going to learn. He's working hard at it, and he's going to earn more time over time.
And if there's any team that has a good track record of knowing how to balance out running backs, it's the Giants,
right,
when they had Ward, Bradshaw, and Jacobs, right, and all three of them were able to carve out a role.
Tell me the last running back who played all 16 games in the
National
Football League.
Doesn't happen anymore.
That's right.
No.
So that's why you have to have – listen, if the Carolina game didn't prove anything else, it proved the importance of depth. We have depth.
Very
so stop
true.
Trying to make a problem of it, Schmel. You're the one that used the word problem. You've got a problem. No, we don't. We have a great situation.
Well, speaking of problems.
You're setting the agenda. It's a negative agenda
I said,
by using
I don't,
the word
I
problem.
I said it's a good one to have, and I shouldn't even call it that. But
that's
whatever.
Correct.
Okay, there you go.
See,
go
it's
ahead,
a wonderful set of circumstances. Who's winning the Ryder Cup?
Not the U.S.,
yes.
I think would be the thing.
Oh, my. Okay.
Yes. Speaking of a team that has a good track record of winning, it's been Europe
yeah,
in this
series. Yeah, no question.
But, and speaking of problems, Schmelk's going to shy away from this topic, so I'll take the courage of bringing this up.
What are you talking about?
Schmelk,
I'm not shying.
Schmelk's been beat up too much already?
Yes, he has, apparently.
Go ahead, Lance.
I'm sure.
It's your turn to get beat up.
I'm sure you have an opinion on the officiating that has gone on throughout the first 3 weeks, given that
you know what I have an opinion? You know what my opinion of it was? Is that a whole lot more was made of it, okay, than should have been.
Oh, thank you. I'm on the same
right?
page with you here.
Oh, Schmelk, then I got to change my opinion.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, the level of hysteria that has been generated through those first 3 weeks was mind-boggling.
It was.
But that's exactly what it was, hysteria, okay? And this notion that – and all you have to do is go back and look at your favorite media people, Schmelk, and see how they covered the league after week one when they said, oh, they did a good job. Maybe this will be okay. Maybe people – then there's a mistake in week two. Okay, so then they finally have something to hang their hat on with the Monday night deal, right? Okay, and then that ratcheted up the hysteria even greater. So that's my impression of it. And let's just give it a couple weeks and see see how the regular guys are doing.
Well,
okay?
I was going to say, you know, people forget. They act like the permanent refs. Nobody ever complained about them before. All I ever heard every morning was that
It's going to be a rude awakening, when all these people in the media who said the replacement guys couldn't get out of their own way, it's going to be a rude awakening when they realize that, geez, the regular refs are human too.
Everyone makes mistakes. And how about this? People have to realize this is a hard job. Reffing a game when you're up close, a guy's going at the speed with the strength that these guys are playing, and you got to referee 11 guys on the field at the same time. This is a tough, tough, tough job. You're not going to get every call right.
We have always respected the job that the officials have to do. We're glad the regular guys are back.
Sure.
Listen, they do a great job. They're human. But this notion that they don't make mistakes is ludicrous. And but anyway, I'm glad it's the travesty of it all is there's two things. One, the travesty of it all is we're in week four of the regular season, and unfortunately for 3 weeks now, this is all we've been talking about is the officiating. The second thing that I'll say in answer to your first question is I think Tom Coughlin and his coaches and his players did a great job of not being obsessed by this notion that something's wrong with the game. Because it didn't matter, right?
Yeah.
You can't go into a game worrying about whether you're going to get a good call, a bad call, an indifferent call. The other team's playing. You know, I heard Parcells on the radio yesterday. He said, listen, you got to remember, It wasn't like it was an unfair advantage for anybody. Right. Both teams were playing with the same set of officials. We did a good job of not becoming obsessed by that, which was something that was completely out of our control.
Do we know who the crew is going to be on Sunday night for our game?
It's been reported that the referee will be Ron Winter, and I believe that report is accurate.
Patrick Lenz, you got anything else for Mr. Hanlon?
No,
there?
I think he's
good.
Here
I got
right
work to do.
You have to start filming the Pat Hanlon A Football Life documentary.
What did you guys do? Did you takeover finally occur? You guys got rid of Nele?
Nah, Nele's off doing something.
He's roaming around.
Usually Nele's part of the studio audience.
Nele's very busy. He's off in some type of high-powered Twitter meeting. So I'm sure.
What happens is when you get a profile in Adweek, your reputation takes on a whole new.
Did you guys congratulate my man R.A. Dickey on number 20 this morning?
No, that's an excellent job, and I would have to say I think he is the favorite for the NL Cy Young right now.
1990 first met. Pitcher to win 20 games since Viola in 1990.
And with a bad team, too. It's very hard to win 20 games with a team like the Mets who can't score runs.
Bless his soul. Yeah. He did a great job this year.
Great story, too, the way
he came
back.
All right, listen, I got
to go. All right, thanks,
Pat.
Appreciate
it. Thanks for the time.
That's Pat Hanlon.
See you in Philly.
Great. Feisty as always. Yes. Pat on top of his game today. We like it.
We wouldn't have it any different on a Friday morning here on Giants.com.
As Pat waves goodbye. Excellent job, as always.
Yes. And he did, keep things in check regarding the officiating. I thought maybe he's a little bit more animated. But
he is right. People went off on these replacement officials. Do you know why? They were an easy target, and they could. Did they make some mistakes, maybe more mistakes than normal officials? Sure. But people would treat a bad pass interference call like it was an egregious call against nature that could not be fixed. And it was just like these heinous moves. This is the worst call I've ever seen. And it's not.
Well, see, a lot of officiating is judgment calls. That's right. What I think a lot of people don't realize. It isn't looking at the rules and knowing the rules like the back of your hand, but it's also interpreting those rules based on what you see. And everyone can have a different opinion. The biggest travesty, though, is what occurred Monday night. And I understand the players are partially responsible, the refs are partially responsible, but whenever a game gets decided on a call like that, it's going to be put under the microscope.
Well, the game was
going to
be decided by a call regardless. No matter which way it went, a call or a non-call would have decided that game.
But clearly based on the evidence that you can see on every angle.
It should not have been a simultaneous catch.
Correct.
The funny thing about this, though, Lance, how many times, and this is just shows you how, fate has a way of working sometimes. How many times over the years have we seen a game end like that on that type of play? In the last 10 years, on a jump ball where two guys kind of come down at the same time. How many times have we seen that happen? Not much. But when you had the replacement officials, guess what? Trouble has a way to find you. And if that's what it took to get this deal done, so be it. I'll take it.
And it was almost as if everyone was wishing for this to happen, essentially.
I mean,
it's an unfortunate circumstance, but the real refs are not complaining that the replacement refs maybe coughed up one here. But
no,
at the end of the day, you're right. It led to a deal. The regular guys are back on the field, and hopefully now the focus can turn back to the product on the field more so than whether or not the replacement refs or even the regular refs know the playbook and know the rule book.
And I got a lot of heat for this. I posted up that I actually had some sympathy for the replacement refs because I feel like they almost got put in a position to fail here. These are guys with not a lot of experience. They're doing the best job they could. And people were treating these guys like they were criminals. They were doing such a bad job, and I thought that was unfair.
I agree with you. They were put in a position to fail. Think about it. If the league really was ahead of the game, they could have had these guys in seminars dating back to January and February, even before last season ended. They knew when the labor deal was going to expire. They could have anticipated that. Instead of throwing them right into the mix a month or two right before the preseason and expect them to digest a rule book that you and I were referencing on Tuesday morning.
250 pages.
I mean, you need a master's degree to understand that.
Which none of us have, by the way.
It's complex. It's not easy.
Correct.
And yes, if that's your job, you should know it. But if you're thrown into the mix and you're supposed to know that in the span of a couple of weeks, that's a very hard predicament to be put into.
Well, it's that, and it's also being able to manage being in such a high-octane environment and situation. The highest level a lot of these guys reffed were high school. And just the environment you got to deal with to keep your head and keep your wits about you.
And the personalities.
In the NFL game. and dealing. I mean, these guys are making calls, and you have Ray Lewis coming up and barking at him. I'd be scared to death, too. Ray Lewis is a monster.
Yeah, but
whoever it is, offensive
you.
Lineman, no, but it's easy to get intimidated when you have a guy like Ray Lewis, a guy like Tom Brady, a guy like Ben Roethlisberger, whoever it might be, coming up to you and screaming at you that you don't know what you're doing. And you watch these guys on TV every week and you've never really been in this type of high octane situation before, it can affect you. Whether you want it to or not, subconsciously, it can make you not make a call, make a call, whatever the case might be.
Plus, a lot of the replacement officials are fans just like the rest of us. I mean, LeSean McCoy came out and had a comment that an official walked up to him during the game.
He later said he was kind of joking, though, right?
Well, whether he's joking or not, it's laughable, at least now.
Yes.
That he had McCoy on his fantasy team, and he was telling him, you know, you got to give me some extra effort here. You got to pick up those extra yards.
201-939-4513. James is in Virginia. Two more calls before we say goodbye. What's up, James?
Hey, how y'all doing today?
What's up, bud?
Hey, I just want to say first things first, always, every time I have an opportunity to, definitely always enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate that.
That panhandling, you need to give that man more time.
He's good.
I'm kind of in a pickle right now. I have a flex spot for my fantasy team.
All right.
And I'm trying to figure out, should I go with Ramsey's Barden or should I go Andre Brown?
I think you should go Andre Brown, and here's why. I don't know how many looks Ramsey's Barden is going to get in this game as the third/fourth wide receiver, but I can guarantee you Brown will either get the first or second most carries. Plus, considering how well he's done in these situations so far, I believe Andre Brown will get the goal line carry. So if you're going to have short yardage touchdowns, I think they're going to go to Andre Brown. So I would definitely start Brown instead of Barden.
I would agree with John. I think the bottom line is Andre Brown is going to get more touches. And when it comes to fantasy, you'd rather have the guy that's at least going to be out there on the field making plays. I mean, Barden is a riskier choice. And who knows? He could come up with a big play. It could be a high-risk, high-reward situation. But I think if you take the conservative approach here, Andre Brown's the smarter move.
Got it. Hey, fellas, enjoy the game because I know I definitely will. And I know the team model is build a bridge, but my model been for this team, all in, let's do it again.
All in, let's do it again.
All in, let's do it again. And have you noticed that all these other teams have kind of adapted that same moniker of being all in?
Yeah, I have noticed
namely,
that.
Namely, Jacksonville Jaguars, and there's a couple other teams I noticed. Can we be original out here, people, please?
Well, you know what? Honestly, James, I agree with you, but there are only so many of these dopey little catchphrases that are out there that make sense. I mean, I think all in was also used by, I think it was an NBA team a couple years ago, but these things all get recycled. But, yeah, I hear you. Especially if the team wins the Super Bowl with it, you shouldn't be copying it. It's a fair point.
Hey, nonetheless, hey, enjoy your day, fellas. Thank you very much for the awesome show and a beautiful job that y'all do.
Thanks, James.
Hey, be safe, be blessed. All in again. Let's do it again.
You too,
James,
buddy.
Appreciate the phone call.
Speaking of mottos, and when I was visiting our good buddy Aaron Goldhammer out in Cleveland over the summer, you know what the Indians' motto was this year? The Cleveland Indians. Why not? ?
Well, that's being original, at least.
Oh my God.
Why not? Wow.
Why not? Nothing positive, just. It's Cleveland. What else do you have else to do? Why not? Fire Manny Acta, by the way.
They've
like
been through a rough
games,
stretch.
I thought was a little
weird.
Yeah,
Sandy Alomar Jr., anyway, the interim coach for six games.
Final call of the show. Sonny's in New Jersey. What's up, Sonny?
Hey, guys. Just a couple of things that I want to share with you.
Sure.
I think if we can control McCoy, the game is ours because Vic will be forced to throw the ball, and he has been struggling recently with the passing game.
True.
Another thing, this would help us to control the ball possession, and we would score more points. Also, some numbers I want to throw out. I think we would have 2 interceptions, 1 fumble, 68 yards for McCoy, 4 sacks, and the final score is going to be 33-24.
Specifics.
Wow.
I like it.
Yep.
Sonny, thanks a lot.
No problem.
All right, Sonny. Yeah.
Sonny, bring in the hammer.
Absolutely. Well, listen, if they can contain McCoy and limit him to 68 yards, that's a recipe for a victory there.
True.
You certainly want to limit his touches. You want to limit his effectiveness because if they get to balance things out, it's going to take pressure off of Michael Vick. And Sonny's right. If you're the Giants, you want Vick to be throwing the ball 45 to 50 times. You look at the percentages. Quarterbacks don't win when they have to throw the ball that much. Drew Brees even threw it 50-some-odd times in Week 1 against the Redskins, and they wound up losing that game, and they certainly haven't done well since.
All right, let's go to our picks here. Now, Lance and I are both struggling.
Are you all in on the picks, by the way?
This has not been pretty. That game, that by the way, and I think one of the reasons Lance is still upset about that call on Monday night, that we both of us had the Packers over Seattle. So that obviously, you know, rubs us the wrong way a little bit there.
I'm bitter over that.
All right. But so you're 5-7. Terrible. I'm at 4-9. Worse. So there you go. Pretty excruciating picks early on. So we got to turn this around and at least get on the right side of 500 here. We don't want to end the season like you did last year, wallowing below 500 like some pathetic wretch. We don't want to be there.
Well, you really ran away with the competition, clearly.
Like,
I mean, it was what,
I was
a
like,
10-game, 12-game
like
cushion. Oh,
Bolt in the 100-meter dash, just waving at you.
There was smoke
the
in the background
line,
as you were running ahead.
All right, game number one, we pick all the NFC East games and a couple of wild cards and an upset. Obviously, Giants are playing the Eagles, so we added a game here to make up for not doing the Eagles game. So we're going to start with Redskins and Buccaneers, and I know, Lance, we differ on this one.
I like the Redskins in this game. The Buccaneers have been up and down. Their defense looked very good against the Dallas Cowboys. Tony Romo had trouble. They didn't really get the running game going. But what Tampa Bay defense is going to show up this week? That's my big question. Plus, they lost Adrian Claiborne, one of their top ends. That, I think, is going to be a big loss. And we saw what the Giants did to their secondary in the second half of their game. I'm not sold on the Tampa Bay defense. I think they have playmakers. They just have not been able to put it together consistently. And Washington has, from an offensive perspective. And I think that RG3 and company are going to bounce back after a tough loss to Cincy.
Don't have a lot of playmakers through the air, though. Pierre Garçon is still struggling to get back from that injury.
Not sold on Hankerson?
No, not sold on Hankerson. Santana Moss hasn't had a big
Fred
year.
Fred Davis?
Alfred Morris is playing well. I'm a big Fred Davis fan. Nevertheless, I think the Buccaneers defense is better than they...
He's no Harry Douglas,
my point
way.
Is this way. I think the Buccaneers defense is not as bad as they showed against the Giants. I think it's much more like the defense that played against Dallas and played against Carolina in weeks 1 and 3. So I think the Redskins will struggle a little bit. I think it'll be a really close game. It'll be a field goal game. Buccaneers are at home. I think they'll come out with the victory, but again, I think it'll be really tight.
One other guarantee, if the Redskins do have an opportunity for a kneel down late in the game, you know what to expect. Continue.
Correct. Well, that means Lance is going to win. Is what that would mean. So obviously,
just
Lance,
a little hint there.
Lance hopes we can have some Greg Schiano shenanigans at the end of that game. Bears and Cowboys Monday night. Both of us like Dallas, but I think both of us think it's going to be a very close game. I'm just not that high on the Bears. I haven't been all year. I think their offense can be inconsistent. Their offensive line obviously doesn't do a great job protecting Cutler. The way Rob Ryan can develop those blitz packages with Anthony Spencer, DeMarcus Ware, the Cowboys secondary has been fantastic. All year long, they lost Barry Church with that Achilles injury. We'll see how they adjusted safety. They picked up a couple guys back there. I'm trying to remember who they picked up. Nobody that was very good.
No, they signed a free agent off the street. And Brandon Carr now, though, they may be utilizing in that safety spot. He played some of that in the second half against the Bucs.
I don't see why they wouldn't use Mike Jenkins at safety. He played safety in college. So we'll see exactly what they end up doing there with the Cowboys at safety and corner. But I think both of us like them to beat the Bears in a close game.
Bears could have Matt Forte back. That could be certainly a big lift. Michael Bush is now supposedly dealing with an injury.
Yeah, he's a little banged up now, apparently.
And the Bears have been inconsistent on offense. But let's not overlook Chicago's defense, John.
No,
they've done
good.
A nice job keeping them in games.
I could see a 2017, 21, 20 type of game there for Dallas and the Bears on Monday night. That should be a fun game. Giant fans can watch it, too, since they play on Monday night, which should be good. Two NFC teams rivals, one the rival in the NFC East, and the Bears could be in the wild card mix. So it's definitely a game that Giant fans we'll want to keep an eye on. This is the Melroy special. We were trying to figure out one more wild card game to take, and we listened to Melroy. Yeah.
A rare occurrence on this show.
I would say. Bengals and Jaguars, a game that nobody in America is interested in. Nobody cares, except for us. So, Lance, what do you got?
I like the Bengals, and I think that their offense can carry them in this game. Jacksonville's going to get a couple of defensive players back, and this is going to be a close game. Nobody's going to run away with this thing. Jacksonville has played a lot of close games. If you look at their schedule, they've just had some heartbreakers, and they've been able to get through some games where they held off Indy. But at the end of the day, you know, the Bengals have made big plays each and every week. And how about them relying on Andy Dalton's arm? Normally, since he likes to run and pound the ball on the ground, and they brought in Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis, Dalton's thrown over 300 yards. He's been effective. They've got Andy Hawkins, that slot receiver who plays, 30 snaps and makes a big-time play each and every game. I think at the end of the day, since he's going to squeak this one out, it's not going to be a defensive battle, I'll tell you that.
All right, if I'm going to pick a dopey game suggested by Melroy, I'm going to pick the dopey team that he thinks I should pick. So I'm going to go with the Jaguars just for Dave Melroy that he thinks they're going to win. So that's my only explanation. That's all I got. Upset
special.
I know. It's fantastic.
Let's see how you do on this next pick.
No
Boy.
one, No wonder I'm 4-9, huh? Upset special. I'm going to go with the Panthers over the Atlanta Falcons.
Wow.
I've had a pretty good track record with my upset specials, as you well know, going back to last year. Now, I think the Panthers, unprepared is the wrong word. I think maybe they overprepared and they were just mentally shot for that game last week against the Giants. I think they're a better team than what they showed. And they gave the Falcons some problems last year when they played them. I think the Falcons could have a letdown game here, coming off a big win, looking ahead a little bit. I think the Panthers will bounce back and have a big game against Carolina. They'll win a close one, 27-23.
All right, so at least we can guarantee you'll be 4-10 to start. I mean, I don't see Carolina.
Oh, well, everyone can stand by for Lance's out on a limb upset special here, where it's basically a pick 'em. Go ahead, genius.
I pick Kansas City over San Diego. I was not comfortable
Chiefs at home
with any
against
of
the
other
Chargers.
Situations.
That's really taking chances.
Wait a minute. The Chiefs have not won a game. Oh, sorry. They're coming off the win against the Saints.
So tell me, Lance.
They have a win.
What is it like?
They haven't looked too good this
season.
What
is it like living life on the edge?
It's rough. It's tough. You know, those risks. I tell you. It's not easy.
Right. Why do you think the brutal Chiefs are going to beat the not-so-brutal
Chargers?
Well,
San Diego's been up and down. The Chargers have their ups, and then they have all of a sudden their downs the following week. So I'm not sold on them being a consistent football team. Their offense has not looked too good, even with Ryan Matthews coming back. Phillip Rivers can give you a game where the passing game looks to click. He'll throw for 3 touchdowns, and then he'll come back, and he'll throw for an interception, and they'll be, you know, moving backwards instead of forwards. So I think Kansas City can maybe ride Jamaal Charles in this game, get some success on the ground, and Matt Castle can balance things out, and they'll be all right.
Wild card game. I'm going to go head-to-head with you, trying to pick up some ground here. I'm going Chargers over the Chiefs. I think Phillip Rivers has a bounce-back game after last week. Also, my fantasy quarterback this week in our fantasy challenge here. So I think
you win one week, and all of a sudden he thinks he's a fantasy guru. It's amazing.
I don't think I'm a fantasy guru.
Schmuck patting himself on the back. It's just
first
like
of all, timeout.
With
timeout,
the Ad
timeout.
Week article.
Did I even
on Tom Coughlin's
I've been hosting
show.
With you 3 shows this week. Have I even mentioned that I won the fantasy thing yet? You just brought it up. I didn't even mention it. So how am I patting myself on the back? You tell me, Lance Meadow.
Perhaps off the air and behind closed
doors.
Oh,
see, he's making things up.
You know, my sources have told me some news. That's all I'm going to say.
Well,
I don't want to give up my sources.
Don't be sour just because you're like
my
in
pathetic
third
fantasy
place
team.
In the overall
it's been
points
a rough
for
start.
The year.
But you know what? It's a marathon.
No, I said third to last.
Oh, yeah.
Third to last.
Who's
He's
to
terrible.
Say that I can't turn things around?
I mean, Howard Cross picks his guys on the phone without even looking at the schedule every week in 5 minutes, and he's killing you.
I've taken some chances, and I also went based on the numbers. It hasn't worked out this season. I mean, I picked Kevin Smith last week. Who thought Mekhi Lashore was going to come back and steal a guy's job?
As we all know, fantasy football has no luck involved. It's all skill, and clearly you're terrible.
Well, if it's all skill, then I don't know what I'm doing.
No.
Apparently.
Well, obviously
I
you don't. I agree.
Yeah.
All right. So I got Chargers over the Chiefs with a wild card. Lads, who do you have?
What, for the wild card?
Yeah,
I don't even
you
remember.
Don't even know.
I'll be honest
the
with
Seahawks
you.
Over the Rams.
There we go.
Clearly, he has a lot of conviction
time
about
since
these
I
picks.
Picked those games.
Oh, we better close
hey,
the
Seattle's
show. You're
defense
apart.
Looked pretty good.
You're falling apart
well,
here.
We've got to regroup here before we close the show. Well, Seattle's defenses look pretty good.
Letdown game.
Letdown.
Classic
game. Letdown
game games. After a big Monday night win against the Packers. Oh, the Rams, they're not that good. I'm telling you.
The Rams aren't that good, let's be honest.
The Rams have played close games all year long.
Their offense
it's time for them to break through. Big game for Sammy Bradford.
So under that same rationale, you could make the argument that it was a trap game for the Ravens last night. Did you think that they did not play too well?
No, the problem, though, is that you're playing a team that's with a rookie quarterback in a short week where they have trouble getting ready for a team like the Ravens.
Did you write the book on excuses? This is unbelievable.
I'm not giving – I'm giving
you
hardcore
analysis. I mean, I bring up a
analysis.
Similar circumstance, and then you turn, well, they've got a rookie quarterback. I'm not sold on Cleveland's offense. So they're the exception to the
week.
Rule. Next week, I'm going to bring up a similar team, and you're going to give me a whole other.
It's the short week.
It's the short week.
Young coach, short week. It's a problem.
I mean, look, the Giants had things – all against them last week.
No, but the
short like turnaround, multiple injuries, and look at how they performed.
Which was the younger team with the younger coach in a short week?
It was the Panthers. 2 examples. let's see if this trend continues the next couple of weeks. Well, you know what? We've got the Rams are playing the
that was
Cardinals.
Buccaneers. Younger team, younger coach, short week. Which team won?
Wait, say that again. I wasn't listening. See, I tune you out at times.
Oh, no, wait a second. Dallas Bucks playing on a Sunday, not a Thursday. Yeah. Never mind.
Talking about somebody who needs to regroup here at the end of the show. Well, I was going to say next Thursday the Rams play the Cardinals.
This is a disaster.
So it'll be interesting to see whether that trend continues with the younger coach.
Well, both coaches are fairly young there. I'm not sure if
the younger quarterback then. Well, they're both quarterbacks are relatively young too. You're stretching for the younger running back now. We got to go third on the depth chart here. Ryan Williams versus Steven Jackson.
All right, key for the Giants to beat the Eagles on Sunday night. Let's move on here. It's 10:40. I have work to do.
Normally,
not all of us have this cushy life of Lance Meadow where they can just hang out.
Yeah, where I'm running to my next gig.
Go ahead.
Anyway, normally I say stop the run, and I think it's important that they contain LeSean McCoy, but to me, the pressure package, dialing up the blitzes, that to me is going to be the key for this game. I think this is a game where the Giants can get a little risky, and they can take their fair share of chances and maybe let the secondary hold its own. You've got to test that offensive line, which is banged up. You've got to get to Michael Vick. If the previous three opponents that the Eagles have faced have had that success, why would you all of a sudden drop back and let Michael Vick get comfortable?
See, I'd be very afraid of bringing pressure because I think that turns into big plays. And I understand the Eagles have had issues at the first 3 weeks. But if I'm Andy Reid and I'm preparing for this game this week, I say the Giants have great pass rushers. I'm going to adjust my game plan here, try to get the ball out a little quicker, try to make some big plays early, and scare the Giants. If I'm the Giants, what I want to make the Eagles do is sustain long drives. Make Michael Vick and that offensive line do it consistently for a lot of plays. And if history has taught us anything, is that if you have them on the field for a long time, they're eventually going to make a mistake and turn it over. The Eagles want to make big plays down the field, the same way the Giants did against Tampa when they kept bringing pressure and the Giants killed them. I understand pressure has worked against Philly this year. I just worry about continuing that trend. Philly's prepared for it. They make big plays, and then you're in trouble. So I'd be more concerned with slowing down the run, playing good pass defense deep in the secondary. Don't let guys like Macklin and Jackson get behind you. Worry about Brent Celek up the seam. Make the Eagles sustain long drives. And I'm not sure if they have the discipline, especially Michael Vick, to sustain those long drives and not turn the ball over.
Well, if Antrell Roll doesn't play, and I think he will play.
So do I.
I think the Giants could get conservative and take the approach where we want to dial it back a little bit and not let the secondary out to dry. But you still need to test the Eagles early. I could see Andy Reid adjusting his game plan, but you know what? Until they show that they want to take the approach of short, quick passes and really milk the clock and put together 10 to 13 play drives, you've got to test them until they show that.
I think you force them to do it. That's my point. You don't give them the opportunity to make those big plays over the top because those are the plays they want to make. But look, you're right. I'm not saying you don't bring pressure at all. If you see that they're still doing all those 5 and 7 step drops in the first quarter, then you start dialing up some blitzes. Start rocking and rolling here. Obviously, you know, no plan survives first contact with the enemy. That's the old saying. But you just don't want to let the Eagles win the way they want to win. And that's what the big play.
But here's why I think the blitz is so critical. One of the ways to take LeSean McCoy out of the game plan, make him become a pass protector.
Which he's been great at in the past, but not so great this year.
And that's why I think if you continually pressure Vic, LeSean McCoy is not going to go out into the flat and serve as an extra receiver. You want him to stay back and provide a second layer of defense for that offensive line. And that means that he's not going to be able to make big plays, even if it's in short pass situations. So that's why I think it's important that the Giants really go out and get at Michael Vick. Take LeSean McCoy out of the game that way, and then you don't have to worry about him really being an X factor.
And if you're the Giants, what I would make sure you do is make sure you protect Eli Manning from the four rushers. Make the Eagles blitz to get pressure. Don't let them get the pressure with that front four. So there you go. That's all I got.
And the Eagles have been statistically pretty good against tight ends. To me, though, I still think Martellus Bennett is going to play a big role in this game in that pass protection scheme. Mm-hmm. And can he continue this run? You know, we talk about how nice it was to see Andre Brown and Ramsey's Barden perform when they had to step up. Let's not forget Martellus Bennett, who was not filling in for anybody. He's been consistent over the first three games. If they can continue to get production out of the tight end spot, that takes pressure off of the receivers. And also, as he starts to draw some additional coverage, could very well open things up for the Hakeem Nixes and the Victor Cruzes of the world, and that'll be a big boost for the Giants.
Lance, thanks a lot, sir.
We will see you on Sunday for the game broadcast right here on Giants.com, beyond a half hour before kickoff.
8 o'clock.
Correct.
Or 7:50. What are you doing?
I think we'll lean more towards 8 o'clock.
All right. 8 o'clock, Sunday night. Be here, Lance Meadow. We'll be back with you on Monday morning. By the way, oh, no, that's the Monday. I have a dentist appointment the Monday after the Browns game, so I'm going to be a little late for that, but
wow,
I'll be here.
Look at this. All right.
I might push the show start time to 10, so you're not solo for so long.
Wow. How considerate.
I'm executive producer.
But what happens if things with the doctor appointment don't go according to schedule? The wait is a little bit longer. You got to keep these things under consideration.
Well, I'm the first appointment in the morning, so the wait shouldn't be long.
What happens
as long
if the doctor
as the dentist shows up
on
time? Well,
see?
I can't control that.
I think
well,
it's
that's
a risky move.
I have you here to hold down the fort. I have full faith and confidence in your ability to hold it down and not be too negative and get Giant fans upset.
Well, that means a lot to me. So I think we're going to keep the 9:30 start time.
No, 10.
Well, it's up for debate right now. Let them get past the Eagles, and then we'll
up
bring
for
this
debate.
Topic back.
This is not a democracy.
Oh, you put it. You
this
put
is
it,
a schmelkocracy. He's correct. Both.
It's a schmelk special.
Right. Thanks, right. Lance. I appreciate it. We'll see you on Sunday night, and we'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by Andrew Mark, right here on Giants.com.